What are the top 10 black and white movies?
But the black and white movies from any era doesn't have to be classic, can also be modern. Find out right now, right here on Movie Mount Rushmore.
Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And me, Nico Leroux, and Fanuary continues, AJ.
Indeed, it does. Indeed, it does. And believe it or not, guys, it's not Frank Torres this week. No, I believe it's good old 001, Mr. Platinum Silver Screen Dude himself, Gavin Mann, who has given us the challenge, which at first I thought would be hard. Then I thought, oh, I've got them. Then it became really hard because I was like, oh God, I haven't seen a lot of black and white movies. Right, get them out, knock them out. Then, how many black and white movies I wanted to see, I was like, oh good Lord above. This could go on forever. This could have multiple versions and ways of breaking this down. So, very good challenge, Gavin. Very difficult challenge, Gavin, at the same time. That's the only way I could break it down.
Yeah, not only a very difficult challenge, but I actually think that I'm always happy with the lists and topics that we have. I can't remember the last time I've looked at a top 10 list and been like, other than maybe my number 9 or 10, pretty much all of my other 8 movies on a given day, I could put them at number one with a different argument. Like, this list is just banger after banger after banger. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar. Some films got a rewatch, others I like. My number one, I thought To Be True to Form had to stay as that. I know you know what it is. But short of
Yes, of
that,
course.
like I nearly even took it off to be different, but I was like, I feel this could have been done by the decades. This could have been a see. This could have been a month long episode of top tens because it's so vast.
It really
I want it to
is.
be fresh in my list. Some are fresh, some are revisited. I kind of made it a mix, but my God, it was a good one.
Put it this way, there's enough for me to do another top 10 black and white movies from any decade or any
Yeah.
era, sorry. Yeah, it's a superb list because you say a black and white movie and your mind instantly goes to silver screen Hollywood, the classic years. You think, 30s, 40s, maybe a bit of 50s, and then you're like, nah, there were black and white movies coming out literally last year. It's like, damn.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Huh.
What?
So, there was a film that was going to be like guaranteed on my top 10. Didn't even make it. It just hit me now.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Very good. Hopefully I've got you. We'll see.
No, I don't think you do because I don't think you enjoyed it.
Oh, sorry, mate. Unlucky.
All good.
Save it for another top 10
Yeah.
movies from any era, black and white movies from any era. But a little preamble aside, shall we get into it?
Yes, we will. But before we do, would you like to tell everyone what the Silver Screen Dudes movie Mount Rushmore is all about?
Yes, basically, we are in our 7th season. This is a weekly top 10 show delivered to you by two best friends going all the way back to our school age. And we're old. So that's a long relationship there. Here's how the job actually works. AJ and I each get assigned a topic. We go our separate ways. We come right back here into this lovely little video podcast and deliver to you the silver screen dudes, our film family, or individual top tens. This week, AJ will go first delivering his bottom three. I will then deliver my bottom three. AJ will deliver his next two. I will deliver my next two. And then we will trade one apiece. If at any time while we are running off our individual top 10 list, one person has a movie in a higher position, the person will say,
Hunt.
and we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to the higher position. Once we have both rounded off our individual top 10 list, we will create the movie in the voice of the dearly departed Matthew Perry Chandler, in the voice of his Chandler Bing character, the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is.
Top 10 black and white movies of any era. Now, guys, once we, the Silver Screen Dudes, have the challenge of making the four must-see movies of the topic, it's on you to get laser focused. You head on over to X and you go to at movie MT Rushmore, or more importantly, at We Love Movies. Movie polls for you from JT of at We Love Movies. And that's where you will crown El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the best of the best of the best. And in the words of Highlander, oh yes, I forgot, sir. And in the words of Highlander, in the end, there can be only one. Take that, Hollywood Reporter. If you know, you know.
You know.
And with that, we will bring up last week's topic, which was...
Best one-on-one fight, excluding Luke Skywalker versus Darth Vader.
And the contenders were...
Hector versus Achilles in Troy. The Bride, Beatrix Kiddo versus Oren Ishii in Kill Bill. Arnie versus the Predator in Predator. And Ivan Drago versus Rocky in Rocky IV.
Right.
AKA Rocky Ends the Cold War.
I'm going to go on the fact that there are haters on this planet, kind of like Crash. Hector versus Achilles in number four.
Yeah, it is. Shouldn't be. By the way, it was all pretty close this week. It was all actually quite close. Hector versus Achilles got 13%, 1-3, got into double digits. Not bad for four.
Good.
So just to really mess with you now, there is only 7% separating the next three. It's very tight.
Right. I am so torn on this. I don't
Bro, this literally another day, this could have flipped another way. This was
the Kill Bill in me doesn't want to do it. Is it Beatrix versus Oren?
It is. Well done. It is Beatrix versus Oren, Kill Bill.
Okay.
The Beatrix versus Oren got 26%.
Cool. Right. Predator number two.
Well done.
Yes. Get in there. The Cold War wins it.
I can't believe that. Rocky beating Predator? I was like, okay.
You know why?
That surprised me.
You know why?
Arnie versus Predator got 28% and Drago versus Rocky got 33%. Man, you know people why? Love that Rocky franchise.
America. That's why. America.
He's but... not human.
There we are. Love okay.
Let's Your number 10, please, AJ.
Right. In at number 10. I don't know if you've heard of this one, my bro.
Edutain me.
Across to me, and maybe you have via proxy or something I'll be discussing later on. This is called Glenn or Glenda, brought to you by Edward D. Wood, Jr.
No.
All right. So this is actually what I would say, I believe it was released in the 1954, it's 50s anyway. The reason why I take a lot of respect for this film, it's only about an hour and something. It's like a mini documentary. There are some parts of it that it's a film, but it's like a documentary. And it's really challenging to the idea of transvestites and transsexuals and hermaphrodites. Brought to you by Edward.
Transvestites or transgender, sorry?
Transvestites. It is transvestites. Okay. But they do also delve slightly into transgender, is transitioning and hermaphrodites and whatnot. It's very brave because at the time that this was released, and this is America we're talking, you would hear about men being arrested for dressing up as women, you know, but it was still a form of expression. And what's really interesting about this is that Edward D. Wood was actually a transvestite himself. So
I did not know that.
The main character he's actually in the film portraying Glenn/Glenda. So you find out the film starts with a transvestite man who's committed suicide, and it's all about not being able to live as he would. And then they go, like, the police then go to a doctor to find out what caused this, and the doctor just starts to give a case study. And this is where he talks about Glenn, who's actually engaged to a woman and they get on really well, but he can't show her his other side. And there are some parts I thought it's very of its time, the way they show, like, well, what happens when this man with his rough exterior wants to go home and relax? He still has to live within the clothes of this, whereas a woman gets to live this way. Like, it's not for me to judge, but it felt very 50s in which the way the tone was portrayed. However, the message may still be realistic at this point. And I feel someone directing and writing this film is familiar with it because it's a life they've lived. And after they show that, they then show of what they call hermaphrodite. Now, I don't believe the person had both genitalia from what I've understood in the film, but they have transitioned in the film, and they explore transitioning from a male to a female, from Alan to Alice. And I found it quite interesting and very brave to tackle at that time. Some would say it's a bit out there, and they didn't. There was one scene near the third act that just seemed to drag, and I wasn't too sure what they were trying to say with that. But overall, I was really impressed by this film. I know it's
nice,
everyone, but I did like it.
Nice. You're number nine.
This is one that we've brought up before, and I believe we've called it one of the oldest films in Silver Screen Dude's history, and I couldn't help but bring it up again. A Trip to the Moon. I want it to be different, and sometimes I even feel like I'm doing it an injustice by keeping it this low each time. But the effects that this film brings from
1908, isn't it?
Is it 1908? I thought it was 1902, but look, it's 1900s. It hasn't entered 19 double digits, right?
It's insane. It is officially the oldest movie we've spoken about. For yeah, sure.
And each time it comes up, and some of the stuff that they've done, it's like, to me, the earliest sci-fi. Even if it's not the oldest film that we've got, it's the earliest sci-fi you'll come across. And some stuff for where they were, you know, you've got to think that man hadn't landed on the moon. Some of the ideas and concepts they had were very close to reality. Like, credit to them. Credit to them. It's just a little French silent film, and it delivered. You know, these little puffs of smoke and fireworks to show people disappearing and stuff popping up and their visions of aliens. It's only a few minutes long, but it's worth watching. And it's available on YouTube, guys. It's out there to be found.
It's quite brilliant. It's quite brilliant. You have to, these are the movies you have to look at as time capsules. You can't look at it through the prism of 2024. This, I'm so proud of you, AJ. This is one for the cinephiles. This is one for people
This one I can't disagree. It is something that, if you appreciate film and it's not just about the crash bang wallops of today, this is something to be like, wow. You know, if you really just sit back and think, they didn't have what we have now. There is no, you know, Alexa, create this. There is no AI, do this.
Yeah.
You know, there
is no ChatGPT. This is very, very much. This is like one of those things you see them today. You know, people who are good, you know, good at building things with their hands, and they take like a nothing and turn it into something amazing. This is very much like that. People working with extremely limited tools, but knowing how to get the most mileage out of them. And having that creative thinking to think outside the box and how to do that. It's very clever.
Yeah. Nothing but love for it. Right. I feel we might be saying punt, but then I don't know how things land for you on this one. It's the comic strip brought to life, Sin City.
It is my number 10.
Oh, nice.
I'm glad this has been brought up, because it doesn't get talked about enough anymore, this film.
We don't. And this is the thing, you know, and part of me was like, when I first thought of this, and obviously my number one being my number one, and at first I forgot about that. I was like, Sin City is going to be my number one. Then I remembered other films and it came up. And in a way, I feel like a disservice. But one thing I love about Sin City is I've not read Frank Miller's graphic novel, but it is literally a panel brought to life. And it was such an interesting take on the way you see cinema films. Like, this was something so novel, because again, you can know your Watchmen, you can know your Batmans, your Supermans, your Iron Mans, call a hero, they're in there. Even the closest we ever had was Ang Lee's The Hulk, and those were only like transitional scenes. This was something fresh, and it was also weird, and it was something hard for me to take in on the first taking. But when I stop and think about it, it's like Pulp Fiction, mini stories told in between. So you've got one story, you move on to a next, and it all just works. I wasn't even a fan, if I'm honest, when I first took it in, but you sit back and study and think, this is the way to take it in. Like a bunch of mini stories, you appreciate it a crap load more. So,
as someone who has read both A Dame to Kill For and That Yellow Bastard, let me tell you this: Mickey Rourke is Marv.
I had a thing on that. And by the way, I'm not going to censor that word, YouTube. It's the title of the thing, so the B word remains. Right, right. I'm not claiming that one. Yeah,
I don't even. Is that still a swear word?
I believe it is.
I know it's the title of a book. Behave.
Yeah.
YouTube can do a big hairy one with that. See, I didn't swear. demonetize us, will you? Look, Sin City is quite the wonderful achievement. It's taken three of Frank Miller's very, very famous graphic novels, smushed them together in a coherent story. It's quite brilliant. Sexual awakening for a lot of teenage boys with the table dancing scene. Thank you, Jessica Alba. To this day, you are still my goddess. Thank you. Yeah, man. So stylish, hyper-violent, witty, cool dialogue, well-paced. It's pretty flawless. I thought it would have made a bigger impact on pop culture than it did. That's, I guess, the only... I don't know why lightning didn't strike with this one. It was just like...
Do you know what I think it is? If it was Recognizable Heroes, I guarantee you. If this was a panel...
Maybe. It kind of feels like it's been resigned to that Matrix territory now. The people who saw it will look back on it and go, yeah, that was cool. But it's not part of... You know, we discussed this a few weeks ago when people like, when someone was saying, oh, the Matrix changed cinema, and we were both, did it?
Yeah.
Break it down. And people, we were all thinking that back in 03, 04, whenever this came out, oh, this is going to change cinema. It didn't.
No.
It was a great ride. Great ride. So that was your 8, my 10. Cool. My 9. Great film. Great, great, great film. Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
That sounds like someone who didn't enjoy it.
Do you know what it is? I think studied it, and for better or worse, I will say I did. It was something we done when it came to courtroom drama. And I feel the story dragged before getting to the courtroom. And I think maybe the intention behind it was something. I didn't dislike the story, but I felt it was more an education than an actual case, the taking in of the case, which kind of bugged me when I watched the film.
So my takeaway from To Kill a Mockingbird is I think it's a really beautiful exercise in restraint from not so much from the filmmaker, but from Harper Lee himself and seeing that coming to life. It's very simplistic to say that it's a racially infused crime seen through the eyes of a child. Sure, but there's more to it than that. The pacing of the book is very childlike. Life probably moves, you know, at a slow pace for a kid. Even though they're growing up the whole time, their life is quite monotonous. It's like, go out, play, do it more, right? Little things come into their life, they forget about it, they move on, go back to playing. Meanwhile, you've got this wonderful character called Atticus Finch, played by I love Gregory Peck, I really do, I think he's brilliant. He plays this role pitch perfectly, and he does this really great balance of being both a protective father, being a good man, but also knowing when to, like, turn the dial. Like when he's sitting outside the house, shotgun in arm, you think, this the same guy? Okay, cool. He played it brilliantly. I the pacing didn't bother me. I thought it was fitting for what they were going for. I'm a big fan of this film.
Cool. Look, I think sometimes you get a takeaway. As you said to me previously about being in the right zone when watching the film, it does apply sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah. And my number 8, I mean, this could be higher, but the thing is, from now on, in my opinion, these are all, it's Seamus. It's banger after banger after banger after banger. It's insane now. Tennessee Williams, A Streetcar Named Desire. Oh, man. With the
now, this I'm going to say to you, is definitely, I feel like I need to be in the right zone. I'm not going to lie, right? We've talked about this film before, and I felt like I need to try and get it. I tried to watch this yesterday. It's just yesterday. And I dare say that conditions can get the best of me, because I know I was up, out, in and out, what have you.
No.
I was very close, though. But here's the thing. I was ultrally confused as to what the narrative of this film was. I'm gonna allow you to explain it, and it allows me to watch it. That's why I'm knocking it before giving you what it was. You watch the film, and from what I've previously heard, Blanche not only descends into madness throughout this film, she's not really the one you're meant to support in this film. However,
you're not really meant to support anyone in this film. They're not.
But here's the thing, because here's how I saw the film. She looks like she's up to something because she's moved and she's very hoity-toity. We'll just call it that. Then you've got Marlon Brando coming in, and you look like she's flirting with him, and you think, you're a piece of dirt. I don't like what you're doing here. And he's like, I'm going to catch her out and whatever it is. But gradually, I found myself being more of her fan than his, and I was like being swung into who am I supporting. And then I was like, I haven't really seen this. I know this is meant to be like a cover-up, and there were some parts where they're like, it pushes the envelope, which, granted, with a 2024 lens on, you're not going to see what was pushing the envelope back then. I get it. We've seen everything.
No, I don't agree with you at all. The ending of this movie still, for me, pushes the envelope now.
Not going to lie, I gave up with the last half an hour. I was like, I'm not giving it the serve. I'm not feeling it enough for it to make my list. And I don't know if I am going to appreciate this film, I'm going to have to start again. I don't have the physical time to.
So the film leaves you on this wonderful did he, didn't he? And Blanche very much becomes a victim of, you know, Peter and the wolf syndrome, right? The girl who cried wolf too many times. Because at this point, you realize that it's just lie after lie after manipulation. She's a serial liar and he's a complete hedonist. He's not a good person. She's not a good person. Arguably, the best person in the film is Stella, her sister, you know, representing the purity of having a baby and all that. But even she's kind of a wet doormat, to be honest.
She kind of bugged me as well. The time she walked away, he gets sprung with a shower and he's like, Stella! She's like, okay, I'll come down. And, oh, you don't understand. I was like, yeah. I don't know if I like you too much.
No, she's weak. She's weak, and you saw the follow-up scene of Blanche saying, like, he's a terrible man, and then when he walks in, she's, like, throwing himself, going, it's Stanley! It's like, oh, you're all really annoying characters. But now think about this. You've had enough relationships to know relationships are very nuanced. They're anything but straightforward and simple. This movie shows that brilliantly. It shows the Peter and the Wolf syndrome brilliantly. It shows that pretty much we've all got some dirty in us. We've all got some bad in us. We've all lied. I love the cross-examination they do of Blanche as being this character with all sorts of mental health problems. Like she's a barrel of messed upness, poor cookie. And Stanley equally the same. And just, it's a game of cat and mouse between them. And it gets ugly, really, really ugly at the end. But even when it's got ugly, you're thinking, but did it? Because you've shown me throughout the last 90 minutes that I can't trust you. And that in turn is hugely conflicting because you're like, huh, if it's true, oh God, even as an audience member, I'm a terrible person for not believing you if it's true. But God damn, you're a terrible person for making me believe you if it's not true. And you're kind of like a real life case. Like you're kind of conflicted, like I'm staying out of this one.
I will give it another shot. There are things that can prove it can work, but like, the jury's out on it at the moment. I was like, ooh. And I really wanted to enjoy it. I really did.
Okay, you're number seven.
Couldn't follow it. But here's one. Here's the one. Previously, you said to me I wasn't in the right headspace. And the first time I watched it, I, again, couldn't follow the narrative. This time I did, and I actually enjoyed the ride. Do I love it? No. Like it? Yes. Sadly, what bugged me is my favourite part of it is the colour scene. I'm talking about Clerks.
Oh, I made your list!
It made the list. It made the list. I don't know what I saw the first time I watched it, but it's very different this time round. I think maybe because you said take it like on a Pulp Fiction thing, and I was just listening to the quirky speech behind it. I just really enjoyed it. I know what is the story. It's just two guys. There I think that's none. What I had to appreciate. The story is just two
it's a movie about nothing.
How they treat customers and life and their perception of it. It was fun. But as I said, it was the scene in the funeral home when they go into cartoon when I was like, what the hell am I watching? Yeah. I just completely lost myself. And I, in a way, nearly didn't make it because I felt like a black and white movie should be black and white, hence one of my favorite films has not made the list for me. But again, I was also very aware that Sin City has a hint of color in it, and I've allowed that to go in. So I was a bit torn with this, and I was like, it's only a couple of minutes, so we'll do that. But no, great film. Great film. I've got to check. Look, I'm on the Kevin Smith journey. I started at film one, and I'm getting his style. So, and I saw it at the end, Jay and Silent Bob will return in Dogma. I was like, maybe Dogma's next. Maybe Clerks 2 next. I'm not sure.
Wait till you see Dogma. That, for me, I think that's his best work. But he's got so many good ones. Mallrats, Chasing Amy.
Mallrats is the one that sticks in my head, is one I really want to see.
Mallrats is really good. Chasing Amy is one of his most profound pieces of work. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is his stupidest, but it's still, yeah, it's really, really, really funny. Yeah, man, I'm massive Kevin Smith guy. Look, this movie is literally like when you and me would leave the lycée and sit on the stairs or in that the rond point or on the island and just talk crap for 2 hours.
Yeah,
that's what this film is.
That's what I took it as this time, and I don't know why I couldn't see that last time. Maybe I was looking for a story, and I'm like, "What is going on?" And I couldn't. But this time, taking it in, I was like, "This, yeah." As I said, it was because of the way I like to consume a film. I do need some form of a story, and I know there was an overarching one essentially. But I was like, "Yeah, you know what? It's fun." So will I say I loved it? No. Maybe after two or three watches, I might do. But I really liked it. I didn't.
It does get better each time. I have to say, it does get better each time.
Cool. Yeah,
I'm really happy you put that on. You're number six.
Thank you. My number six is related to my number 10 because, yes,
I know.
You know where we're going, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's Edward.
Yeah.
Good old Johnny Depp as Edward. I nearly, very, very nearly done Project 9 from Outer Space as well. But, it just couldn't make that. I couldn't do three of his films in one go. And what I loved about this, again, Johnny Depp. Oh, what a talent. What a talent. Good to see George the Animal still as a wrestling fan. But what I liked about this is Edward is Tommy Wiseau of his generation. You know, it's everything you need. This is the disaster artist, for better or worse terms. If you appreciate the disaster artist, you're going to love Edward. It's the only comparisons I can build. It's just showing a journey.
I'm sure how Edward would feel being compared to Tommy Wiseau.
Bro, this film has got, I think, a Turkey Award. Like, they started off the Turkey Awards, not even the Razzies, the Turkey Awards, because this guy is known as the worst. Project 9 is meant to be like the worst film of all time, and he's known as the worst director of all time. That's the exact thing that's gone to it.
He's definitely not, Vogue.
Listen, I like Glenda, where some people call it like trash B movie. Like, I was like, I don't feel he's that bad. I actually liked, have you seen Project 9 by any chance?
No.
Had a watch of it again, in and out, really bad condition. But some of the way he uses stock imaging to make stuff work and stuff like that, really, it's not as bad as it was. There are some terrible acting. There are some scenes that are very close to, hey, Mark, how's your sex life? Like, literally talking to a pilot, and they're like, literally a full on conversation with the pilot. And then she turns around to the co-pilot. Oh, I haven't said hi to you or something like that. And it's like, he's asked her out to a date while they're talking about an alien invasion. And you're like, oh, you didn't really just do that, did you? Literally, a guy's talking about an alien invasion. It's like, hi, Gina. Hi, Mark. He's not Mark, but it was literally to that degree of, oh, you didn't. And this film shows you how he went from making bad film after bad film in weird ways of like just one takes. Like, in Silver Screen News, I talked about one take Tony. He was literally that, like, okay, cut. They're like, do you want it? It's so bad. Have you seen this film? Yeah.
No. Oh, Edward with Johnny. Yes.
Yeah. You know the part where like George the Animal still walks into the framework of the door.
Long ago, bro. I ain't got no memory of this.
And they're like, do you want to reshoot that? He's like, no. I think that's how a zombie would work. Like, the guy literally worked off of one takes to make his films. It's absolutely bat crap crazy, but it worked, and that's why you can balance it. Do you know what? If it's a long time ago, it's on Disney Plus. Give it another watch. I'd be intrigued to see how you feel about it. But I just had shades of Tommy on it, man. But yeah, I enjoyed
poor
this.
Ed. Poor Ed. Maybe poor Tommy. I don't know.
I don't know. I somehow feel Tommy might have got inspiration from Ed as well, but it's not for me to judge. I love Tommy, and I've got a lot of love for Ed based on what I got off this. I actually want to see the rest of Edward's collection of films. Like, it's interesting but weird.
You've got me intrigued about going to down an Edward rabbit hole now. My number seven, arguably the most influential comedy of all time. Some Like It Hot. Marilyn Monroe.
I knew you'd have it as well.
Of course. Dude, what I found out recently, did you know this is a remake?
No. How would I? Of what?
Like, a German film.
What's this? Trip to the Moon old for it to be a remake?
It's a remake of a German film.
Ah.
Who knew, right?
No.
Some Like It Hot is a remake.
Mind blown.
Right? So cool. Even back then, they were doing remakes. Ah, they don't need to do remakes now. They didn't back then, too. I love it. I love how the narrative just never changes. Poor Nate, bless him, going like, there's no good vampire movies in the 21st century. What? Bro, there's more than Twilight. He's a Twilight. He's a Twilight boy, guy. That's what he is. Twilight boy is going to be a Batman. Yes, he is. And he's awesome. Yeah. Some Like It Hot. We speak about it a lot on this channel. I believe it's Mr. Andy Hart's favorite movie at Fandango Groover on X. It's so good. It's quite the accomplishment when you consider that Marilyn Monroe was very happy on pills for this movie. But it's got some surprising depth to it. Yes, it's got slapstick. Yes, it's got good comedy vibes. But it's also kind of gnarly. Like, the mob trying to whack them and then chasing them throughout the movie. And that whacking scene in the garage is quite intense, actually, for a comedy. Like, call me. I was like, okay. Man got full-on Robocopped. Like, okay. There's a reference that you may not remember. But yeah, man, I love this film. Funny. Timeless, really is timeless. Arguably more relevant now than ever. I'm not a woman. Nobody's perfect. You know what I mean? It's really aged quite magnificently, this film. If you haven't seen it, really go back and watch it. This is an all-time great.
Cool. Yeah, I need to rewatch it. It's been a while for me.
Good.
That's your number seven, yeah?
That was my seven. My six. Oh, this was always going to make the list. I thought this was going to be my number one at one point, and then the brain started working. But possibly my favorite French film ever, Mathieu Kassovitz's La Haine.
Do you know what? This was on the list, and it was that very poster. Another film took over and came up a lot higher. So
it's so powerful.
I know.
It's so powerful.
The reason I knew I could take it off is because I knew if anyhow you talk a black and white film in any era, you are all over this film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the only reason I knew I could get rid of it.
Yeah, this is very much my jam. A French hood movie with a North African, a black guy, and a Jew. Who knew? Set against the first Parisian riots during the 90s. We open on Paris. It's a city in complete decay. Gangs run the city. All true, by the way. This went down. This happened in Paris. It's not like some fantasy. Like, no. This happened. Like, that opening you see of the streets in decay and the cars on fire, that's first-hand footage that Kassovitz took of Paris as it was burning. It's crazy that this happened. But it just goes to show.
It does feel post-apocalyptic watching it. It just doesn't feel real.
Some parts it does, yes. Yeah. Like, how did this happen? I'll tell you how. Because no one does revolution like the French. Annoy us, we behead you.
The tracks.
Just ask good old Louis or Marie.
There are a few.
Dude, like, don't mess with the French when it comes to, like, take away our rights. Révolution.
It just is
what it is. And this movie really, really captures the aftermath of a riot and of a city in complete decay as a result of it. Hyper-violent, but also hugely funny. Not funny as in it's a comedy, but funny as in he just said, what? Ta mère sur des os. Your mother sucks bears. What? It's brilliant lingo. Very, very, very rude. But the exchange between the characters, ah ouais, mec, je l'ai mis comme ça, pa 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 sur la tête, et il a pris dans le cul, et c'est fini comme ça. Là. It's like, wow, you really, really tapped into your inner hood for this movie.
It's authentic. That's the thing about it. For it
you
to be
what
it
my
is,
mouth.
It's authentic.
You took the words out of my mouth. you can just see the little Lascar in the streets behaving exactly like this. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. The less privileged kids of Paris do behave like this. I don't mean with the riots, but I mean their lingo and the music they're into and the way they talk to each other. It's mega authentic.
And that's the way they would challenge the police. Like, you're not allowed to be on the roof, but we're not doing anything. You can't move. Like, it's very authentic.
The part it's I love is when the mayor shows up to their estate block and he's like, you young gentlemen, come down. And Vince is just like, oh, wait, 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 monsieur le maire, monte ici que je t'emmène dans le cul, le maire. That's what I'm talking. Wait, Mr. Mayor, come up here. Let's have a chat, innit? It's crazy, man. Your number five.
Right, my number five. This is an exchange of your number one, believe it or not. I know what your number one is without even going there, because each time we go into these films, we always have the same one and two. I've finally seen another Kurosawa movie. Rashomon has been seen.
Ain't it good?
Had to make the list. Had to make the list for it to, as I said, I wanted to bring a bit of variety into this list, and it was good. This was nice. This was a different. It's not Seven Samurai, but it's still good. This is what I like about it. It's very different.
Some people say it's better than Seven Samurai. I can't wrap my head
around No. The third witness or the third person to tell the story kind of threw me off. If you know me and the Green Mile, you want to understand why the third witness troubled me. It just wasn't what I was ready for. I was like, okay, I get it, but I don't get it at the same time. It's literally a case of what is the truth. And this is what I like about this film, because in this situation, dare I say, even the fourth witness has me wondering, is that the truth? As much as it should be seen as the truth, I've had to digest three different versions of the truth so far. And not just that, the fourth witness is also the first, technically the fifth. The fifth witness and the first witness are technically the same person, and those are two very different tales. So why should I believe you in the second instance of you talking?
Ain't it wonderful how over half a century on, we're still praising Kurosawa for creating the unreliable narrative plot device?
Yeah, and this is the thing. So there's so much to it. And I was very intrigued of how you can see different perspective and it's on you to decide what is real from what's not, which is essentially the case of a jury. Like, you're going to hear different sides of a story, multiple at some points. And you have to think what is the most logical.
Could it be argued that this is also Kurosawa creating what we've come to know today as the court of public opinion? Because he's literally putting it to the audience and going, you decide.
Well,
literal characters in the movie are going, yeah, that's a story. That's a story. I don't know where to believe. Yeah. Crazy, huh? And yeah. Toshiro Mifune is so good. Jesus Christ. He's so good. I love him. He's such a larger than life. Like, he's like,
he brings the eccentricity, doesn't he?
He's the Japanese Al Pacino, bro. You can just see him going, oh. He's so over the top, but in a way that never feels Tommy Wiseau over the top. It feels Pacino over the top.
I did enjoy his character. And even that, the range that you get from him as well. Because again, when I go to what I'll call the fifth witness telling the story, and without getting into it, but it's very different from when he's telling his side of the story in terms of, you know, how he handles the situation. And I have to respect the range that he delivered in that. So no, it was a good watch. It was a good watch. And I'm happy to finally have it on my list, not just on a list, because yes, it's been discussed on the Silver Screen Dude front, but to say I've finally seen it and to add, I would recommend it for people to watch.
Yeah, man, I'm very happy you finally seen it. You see how influential it is now, which is fantastic. Okay, my number five. Thought it would be higher, but again, movies pushed it down. Martin Scorsese's Raging Bull. Man, I love this film so much. What De Niro did with this character, embodying the anger, embodying the, you know, the horrible, horrible husband, but at the same time, this mega star athlete who essentially crumbles under the pressure because of because of his lack of support system and his lack of ability to cope with this crazy fame and this crazy lifestyle. He is ultimately just a simple guy from the block. He's, despite the fact that he's made for boxing, he's not made for boxing, if that makes sense.
I need to see Raging Bull again. Raging Bull was seen when you gave me all those VHS. So I'd seen Casino, Goodfellas, and Reservoir Dogs in that time, and Raging Bull and Taxi Driver are two films I feel that I need to assess again, to be honest. I love De Niro. Sometimes you can get movie overload, and I did want to try and get it in for this week. There were just too many films, Gavin. Just too many films.
So, and it's not a short movie, it's a Scorsese movie. They all long.
Yeah, so I couldn't make the cut or a rewatch this time. But another black and white is very much quite high on the list of films I do want to see.
That's superb, mate. Your number four.
Right, my number four, Donde Estas. This is the film I put you onto, and I don't know if it's going to be a punt if it makes the list or not. I know you love it. One of the original noirs, Double Indemnity.
Side list, that was for my another.
Okay, yeah. If you appreciate a noir movie, this is like one of the first, if not the first, I can't remember. This, I remember being taught about it.
It is the first.
Yeah. And it's the story of an insurance salesman who falls for the femme fatale, and it's the story of how, in order for, what is it, if her husband, the husband dies, this shows how long ago I've seen it, but the husband dying in an accident, she can claim double on the money, and it's something to get away with. So they're now plotting on how to get rid of the husband in an accident and run off together with the riches. But if it was just as plain as simple as ABC, it wouldn't be a movie, because the plot twists and turns that come along, and trust, and who's there, and what you think you got away with, and the police investigations, and can you trust, and will you trust?
Oh, the paranoia. It's so good.
Absolutely intense, incredible movie. Been a while, but I remember how hard it hits, that when I thought of black and white movies, I couldn't leave it off. I nearly did. I very nearly did. And I was like, no,
it's hard to.
It needs to be on. And it, with no guarantee of us confirming that there would be another, I was like, it needs to make the list. It needs to make
You know what I love about these old movies is they don't fap around at the beginning. Like, it just gets straight in there. First scene, oh, you're an insurance salesman. I'd like to talk to you about. No. It's like, Jesus, all right. No time to get my Coke and popcorn in this movie theater, eh?
We are waiting. These films, if you miss the beginning, catch the next screening. Do not just walk into the room. I'll catch the wind of it. No. You need every scene. This is one of two of my uni films that made the cut, and highly recommend it.
It's brilliant. For my number four, just go ahead and bring up the punt sign.
How dare you? Four. Mine said four, you know. Punt.
You're number three.
Right, my number three. This is the second of uni films that I came across. And I'll be honest, I rewatched it this week, and I appreciate it a lot more than I did the first time. We are talking about Fritz Lang's first talking movie, M. Have you heard of it?
M or Metropolis? They're the same movie, aren't they?
No. No, Metropolis is like a sci-fi, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not. No.
I don't think I've seen M, you know.
You need to. Bro, if you like Double Indemnity, jump on M all day long, right? I'm going to tell you the story, and I know you're going to be on it.
Talk to me.
It might affect you a bit more now because you're in dad mode, but it's not bad. It's not great.
No, come.
Going at it is the story of a child killer. He goes around, there's a guy going around killing children, but you don't see any murders, right? And you can see these kids, I think, singing a song, and the mom's like, stop singing that song, it's not funny with the events that's going on. And then that same mother has gone into her house, and you can see this kid there, and she's reading the story, and this big shadow comes on and is like, hi, little girl. And he's whistling a song. I should know the song, but I can't think of it right now, what it's called. And he offers her a balloon, and that's it. Next thing on the news story, is it Ellie Eichmann or something like that, has gone missing. And that's it. You know what's gone on. And the police are chronically on a mission to find who he is. And he's written a letter to the newspapers saying, the police haven't taken me seriously, so I'm now writing to you guys.
It's got some Zodiac to it, huh?
Kind of. He writes this message, and it's like, oh, they haven't stopped what is it? They didn't take me seriously, but I'm just letting you know that I haven't finished just yet. So it's a short message and it gets published. And now people are all over the place. They're taking it serious. And the police are now up to even more. They're trying to find him. You know, they've gone to the newspaper to get the original form of the letter to try and find fingerprints. They're trying to see the handwriting style. They're studying all of it. And they're there. And now what they're doing is they're stopping off in every establishment possible. Hotels, bars, motels, the lot. And they're checking everybody's papers to try and find out who this killer is. Because, you know, there's been a series of kids being killed. What happens because they keep doing that? The mob are now not able to execute their business. Because in their places of business, the police are stopping them all the time. So now the mob are saying, we need to find this guy.
Oh, damn. So he makes enemies with the wrong people. Okay.
So now both sides, you've got the law after you and you've got the bad guys after you. And they're like, look, for us to be able to conduct our operations, we can't have the police stinging us on every given corner. So now the hunt begins. And now the mob are invested in it. And now the police are kind of aware, but I think the mob have kind of put, if I remember right, the mob have put a hit out like, we need to work together on this because business cannot flow. So I'm encouraging all people to give all information provided. The mob then start to hire all forms of beggars left, right, and center and start to offer them food and like a reward. If you see anything, you're our eyes and ears on the streets. Find this guy. Eventually, the killer is found. By who? I'm not going to spoil. What happens? I'm not going to spoil. But very good film.
Very long? Good.
Just under 2 hours.
AJ Vision?
I think it, yeah. But okay. But if you Google it, and I'm this is something I found recently, and it's how I saw Rashomon, believe it or not. I believe it's on Plex. Plex is, if you Google it, you only get a few adverts in between it, but you don't even need to sign up to Plex. I don't know if you've ever seen Plex. It's like a purple, an orangey-yellow logo. And yeah, it's
yeah, there. It is on Plex.
Yeah, bro, watch it. I went for the advert-free version, but yeah, check it out on Plex.
It's on Prime as well, but paid.
But with Plex, it's there. Okay, a couple adverts. All you need to do is just press the button at the bottom, and it gives you the...
YouTube, you know.
Oh, there you go. What I know about Plex is that you were able to get the subtitles, but I'm guessing YouTube would have it as well.
Let's have a look.
But I highly, highly... This was brought up to me in uni as well. And it was a load of...
With his little chopper, he will chop you?
Come again?
With his little chopper, he will chop you? Is that the song?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You love YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube brings out some bangers every now and again. And there's this thing, I remember I believe his name was Will Brooker, my teacher back then, was teaching us about why it was called M, because yes, it's murder, but you've also got the duality of the character and the two sides of the law chasing him. There's a lot behind why it could also be called M, but trust me.
Okay, I actually really like the sound of this.
Check it out. Oh, you're going to be all over it. I guarantee you, you're going to be all over
it. Nice. My number three. Sue me. I'm cheating. I love this film. American History X.
The minute you said Sue me, I knew where you were going. Can I be honest? American History X was initially my number 10 because of the mix of color and gray.
Don't care.
You know me. You know me in this film. Like, it should really, it's top four territory all day long.
Top 10 movies of all time. This was our one commonality.
Exactly. Yeah.
I believe we both had it in the same spot, like number 5 or 6 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, dude.
Crazy good movie.
Don't mess with the silver screen dudes in this film.
Yeah. It's war. It's war. To crap on this film with us.
Dude. The fact that the director kind of got exiled from Hollywood after making this film still makes me go, huh? Like, it's such a freaking masterpiece. The black and white to tell the story in the past, the dash of color to tell the modern day story. There's more black and white than color.
Yes, there is. 100%. 100%.
And that's why it's making the list. If this was just like two black and white scenes, I'd be like, you're pushing it a bit. But like, no, this is a predominantly two-thirds black and white easily. Film. Huh?
75-25 easily.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking too. And it's so aging, man. The story of, I mean, look, the black and white stuff is, it's It's a neo-Nazi, essentially. Huh?
Yeah. It's the story. It is what you pay attention
to. The black and white part is the story. It's the neo-Nazi who gets caught doing some dumb things to people of a certain skin complexion, and he ends up in prison. And it's his story of... It's a story of retribution, of reform. And, you know, it's tragic because you realize that once you go in that life, even if you do reform, it still chases you. The people who are in that world still haunt you. The lifestyle that you used to live doesn't just go away because you've done time. And it's, you know, it's very much the same message as La Haine, which we spoke about a moment ago, provides. Hate breeds hate. Right?
Yeah.
And it's, dude, it's really tragic what happens with the two brothers. It's you know, it wonderfully shows history repeating itself. The older brother did some dumb-headed stuff. The younger brother follows suit. The dad was an influence, albeit a subtle one. It really just shows a very, very believable gradual spiral into his neo-Nazism. It's a messed up movie, man. Arguably, Edward Furlong has never been better than in this.
I don't think so. I am yet to see it if he has.
Maybe Primal Fear. Maybe. But he was such a force of nature in this. Oh, yeah, he's brilliant. That's who Barry Keoghan reminds me of.
What, Furlong?
Yeah. Barry Keoghan's got that same demented, calm vibe that Furlong has.
I could get where you're going with that.
I was thinking, like, is he the new Tom Hardy? I'm like, nah, he's not. And I know it shouldn't be like the new this. Yes, he's the first Barry Keoghan, and I'm all happy for it. But if I had to assimilate him to someone, he's like freaking young Edward Furlong. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I love this film, dude. You're number two.
Bro, this film, M is you, right? But yeah. I really, really encourage you to find this film. It's Paid or AJ Visioned. Well, as I found somewhere recently on the internet is what they say. If you can find it somewhere else, they just say that. If not, they put internet. That's what someone's Instagram said recently. But this one, bro, it's a beauty of a film. The Artist.
Have you heard of it?
This film, I need to get the year because I'm so shocked. 2011 black and white silent movie.
No kidding.
It's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. I fell in love with it. If it wasn't for my number one being my number one, there's a chance this could be. Like, I know that I could jump on a hype train, but this film is cinematic beauty, right? Not to mention the female lead, Berenice Bejo, is also cinematic beauty, but we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But the story is, it's very similar to Singing in the Rain, but vice versa of Singing in the Rain. Because where Singing in the Rain is showing that the stars of the silent era have to adapt to the talkies, this is different. So you've got this one guy who, let me get his name. There's French actors, you know, because it's a silent film, they can star alongside John Goodman and it means absolutely nothing because no one's actually talking, which is the beauty of this film. Jean Dujardin plays George Valentin, right? Now, his character is the biggest silent movie star, and he actually is in a film with his wife in this film. And as the film ends, he's there applauding, taking the clamours of everyone in the cinema. He's got this little shtick he's got with his dog where he pretends to shoot it and the dog plays dead and everything. He's the biggest star. He walks out of the cinema and he's taking a picture from the paparazzi, and this girl comes out. She's in the background and her bag drops, and she tries to go to pick it up and she falls over the line, pushes into him, and he's kind of like, you're stealing my thunder, but he gives her a hug. She gives him a kiss on the cheek, and it's like, who is this girl? And that's all the story is, like, who is this girl? You can see a bit of jealousy from his wife, but it's just like, hey, it's just who she is. From all of this fame and what have you, this girl, played by Berenice, I'm just going to get her character name, Pepe Miller. Pepe Miller decides to go down to Hollywood to just be an extra and on a film, and it's just to see a lady who can dance. That's all she needs to do. And ensues the fact that she tap dances and she gets picked. George sees the legs, but behind a curtain, doing some tap dancing. He's like, I like her style. They start tap dancing. They lift up the thing because he says, I need to see who this is. He recognizes it. It's the girl from the picture. And with that, he gives her her first break in a film. And she now goes from just a feature act to appearing in her own films. So she's big, he's big, but they've not really done a lot together. Enter the talkies. Now, what does George say? It's just a fad. It won't last. He doesn't want to do talking movies. And what I love about this film is they show him a screen test of a talking movie, but you don't hear talking. It remains a silent movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought was really interesting about it. And now what you see is the descent of his superstardom versus her ascent, Pepe's ascent, because she's going into the talking and moving. But they've always kind of maintained this friendship, even though their paths are going in juxtaposing directions. Really, really beautiful film. And I don't want to give a spoiler, but there is one scene where you see George. It's the most meta thing you can see. He puts down a glass and you hear the glass hitting the table. And he reacts to the fact that you can hear glass hitting the table. And everything about, yeah, like it's because it's a silent movie, right? So him hearing a sound, even though it's his real life.
What the hell?
I'm not going to spoil anything more, but I just love that scene. I had to share that. But watch the film. Because I know you like your La La Lands and your Singing in the Rains, I know you're going to enjoy this film.
I was going to say, the way you're describing it gives me proper Singing in the Rain vibes, you know?
Yeah, but I kept looking at it and I'm like, it's the anti-Singing in the Rain, because where they're adapting to it, this film remains silent. And it is just awesome the way that, honestly, when it comes to words, all right, there's one song that comes in. Words don't come till the end. You do not hear words until the very end of this film. It remains a silent movie. I think it's art to get that in the 2010s.
Damn. Yeah.
Bro, check it.
Damn. Yeah, that sounds very me. The glass thing has got me so like, oh.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
That's cool. I like that. Dude, my number two. My favorite Stanley Kubrick movie. One of my top five films of all time. Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Every time people always get funky with me when I bring this up. Because how can you say that? It's The Shining. How can you say that? It's Barry Lyndon or Full Metal Jacket or 2001 A Space Odyssey. I don't think so.
I like Strangelove. I didn't like The Shining. So you've got part of my vote already. I can't say I've seen the rest. This is the only Kubrick I will give time to. I've got to be honest.
I love it. Full Metal Jacket, you must watch.
I will give it a shot. Awesome. I'm saying, 2001 A Space Odyssey, when I started seeing Gorilla Suit, like I had Cadbury's chocolate drumming, Phil Collins more than anything else. I know that's a spin. I know
it's the monkeys from the Chewit commercial.
But yeah.
That's funny. Nah, man, Full Metal, you must watch. Must, especially when we've got a certain topic coming up. Oh, no, it doesn't qualify. Oh, that's a shame. November, Remembrance Day, 21st Century War Movies.
Oh, really? Yeah, and by that nature, no, it won't, yeah.
No, it doesn't qualify, obviously. But yeah, man, the Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Loving and Learn to Love the Bomb, one of the all-time great acting performances from Peter Sellers, George C. Scott on firing form, a black comedy about the nuclear tension between Russia and America, the constant espionaging that was happening between the two nations, the way that they have to collaborate together, or do they, in order to stop this rogue general who's trying to launch an A-bomb from B-52 bomber, with one of the great all-time scenes going, the guy riding bomb with his hat. Dude, gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. It's such a freaking great line, isn't it? Yeah, between I know Dimitri. Well, of course, Dimitri. Well, how do you think I feel, Dimitri? Like, he's such a little mincer, isn't he? The president. And then contrast that with what he's doing as Mannführer, man.
Sellers is a god for this film. An
Sellers,
actual god for this
yeah.
film.
Sellers, you have to put him up there.
In honesty, and I know it may be a topic, it may not be a topic, but spoiler, if we ever do one actor playing multiple characters in one film, he owns it. Forget anything you've seen in Nutty Professor, Coming to America, God forbid, Big Mama's House. Nothing outdoes Peter Sellers doing multiple characters in this film.
That's a good top 10 topic. Actors who have played multiple characters in the same movie. We'll table that. That's a really good
It's a
idea.
good one if we can make 10. Yeah.
There must be 10. In all of cinema, there must be 10.
Unless you do Austin Powers 1, 2, and 3, then you're not far
Oh,
off.
that counts. Hell yeah, that counts.
Between that, the Nutty Professors and the Big Mamas, it will work. It will work.
Okay. Yeah, man. No, and this film, it does have a very somber message. Like, hey, we need to be freaking careful with what we're doing with nukes. It's still relevant today. It's very, very much a timeless movie. And as we get, crazier leaders like your Kims and your Donalds, it's kind of takes on a true meaning. It's like, oh.
Donald, who may be two-term Donald, which is
There's no maybe he's gonna be. I've told you this 4 years ago. I said Biden will do one term and then Don will be back. I told you this would happen.
See.
Americans love the underdog story. No, I don't know quite how you consider a billionaire who's gone bankrupt five times an underdog, but anyway, America. Well, he's my man. I like what he talk about. You mean he don't like black people? Yeah, that stuff. That's true. He like guns. Oh, freaking mongrels.
And we digress, but yeah, I get where you're at.
Now I've said my piece. Your that was my two then. So, oh, by the way, Doctor Strangelove, if you haven't seen it, freaking get on it. It's incredible. I don't have a worst. Do you?
You know what? I did, but I feel like I have a worse worse than what I have.
Please.
I don't have. So here's the thing. I was gonna go for, and I did feel like I need to watch this film again, and I brought it up before as a worst. Brief Encounter. The story of a lady who had this weird brief encounter with a gentleman on the train, and she's suddenly confessing to her husband while he's reading a newspaper, and she's mentally saying it. It's meant to be a great love story. I didn't get it. I nearly went down the Casablanca route. But now that you showed me
Whoa.
Strange Love and I saw the American flag, I'm gonna quote and give my hate to America where I can. Birth of a Nation. I don't have an image for it because I've only just thought of it. But screw that film. Screw that film with the fire of a thousand suns. You want to portray a certain race of people as the enemy, which has led to stuff that is just nothing but hate within that country up until today. Screw you. I don't have an image for it. Actually, by the time this is published, I'm going to have the picture up on it. Yes, Birth of a Nation remains my worst film of all times. Period. Not even seen it. I just had to see 13th, which I do encourage you to watch on Netflix. 13th, that will give you
Yes.
something, people. But Birth of a Nation, only from that. I don't need to see the film to know I hate the film.
Yes. Yeah. I'd co-sign that. I'd co-sign that big time. Right. Should we get our obvious number ones out the way?
12 Angry Men. Who was ever shocked that AJ was going to pick 12 Angry Men over absolutely anything? No. Oh, look at that. Both the silver screen dudes have a number one that has a number in it as their number one. He has a 12.
Very
He had,
good.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to be so rude as to spoil his number one. He knew what mine was as the film was done, as the topic was picked. I knew what his number one was as soon as it was picked. 12 Angry Men is the film I'm eternally grateful to be introduced to, thanks to the silver screen dudes. I've always loved the courtroom drama. I've loved that kind of whodunit element. And this film, essentially, over everything else, just shows plausible deniability. You've got 12 men in a room, they've been in the jury for the longest while. Do you commit a 13-year-old boy to death? Because that's the way it goes. There's no life imprisonment over there. It's does he go to death? It seems like a cut and dry case. This is the fact, he's guilty. But it took one man to just say, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. I get what you're saying, and I'm not saying he's innocent, but this is a man's life. Let's just look at this a little deeper.
What do you mean?
No. I get you, but let's just look a little deeper. And all we need to do is just have reasonable doubt. As long as it's because that's what we're here for. As long as there is reasonable doubt, we cannot kill a man. I'm not saying he's innocent. I'm not saying he's guilty. I'm just saying, if the facts can't give you 100% guarantee, even if it's 0.5, that 0.5 means he should not die. Ensue the debate.
0.5 means he should not die. It. Yeah.
Love it. Great film.
Right. Give you one. No, I'm not even going to give you a guess because you know already. If you know me, you know that my number one is Seven Samurai because doi. As this BFI poster says right here, the greatest foreign language film ever made. I don't think that's an overstatement. Not only the greatest foreign language film ever made, the most influential foreign language film ever made. The fact that this movie has been remade frame for frame as a Western twice. The fact that the overarching narrative of this movie, which is seven people come together to defend a village from an invading force, has been used in so many countless movies. It's ridiculous. It's even been used as a plot device in episodes of series. Look at the village invasion I think it was the first season of Mandalorian. It's literally Seven Samurai. It's literally Seven Samurai.
Can I say, and some may disagree, some may agree, Avengers? Avengers Assemble, for better or worse, is Seven Samurai.
Completely. Completely, bro. Tremors.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Legitimately tell me I'm wrong. A group of people band together to defend their village from an invading force. In this case, it just happens to be big worms instead of, you know, people with swords.
Yeah. Ah, you're right. There you go.
Dude.
That's a great film. It's a great film.
It's long but doesn't feel long. It's got great character moments. It's heartfelt. It's sad. It gives you levity. The sword scenes are really hard hitting, not just for the time, but just in general. It truly, truly is a masterpiece. This is Kurosawa's magnum opus. I don't want to hear it about Rashomon's the better movie. I adore Rashomon.
Having watched both, no.
It's just not.
No. Rashomon's easier to take in because it's a shorter film, but it's not the better film.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. Yeah, man. This... I love this film. Love this film so much. So,
now, I'm going to propose something.
Please.
I don't know if you'll agree or disagree. I feel like we should shelve our number ones.
I'm down.
I feel like they're just the blatant obvious and it's going to be the winners. And, it, you know, it's just the way of it that it's going to be one or the other that's going to win either way.
Cool.
So Sin City makes it because that was in both.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have anything else?
We did not.
Wow. So Sin City is the number one film, guys. No need to vote.
Full circle, because you thought that would be your number one.
I would like to see M in this, if you don't mind. I feel M... is an all-time classic, and I'd like to see what people think of it.
I can work with that.
I would like to put the artist, but I don't know how many people have seen it, so I'm going to leave it off. But I encourage you to watch it.
Raging Bull?
I would go for that.
I worry we're going to have a destruction here with Raging Bull being in there, you know?
I don't know. M has a following, you know.
Okay, fair.
M has a following. I'm part tempted to go down Clerks.
Okay. Some like it hot.
I would listen to that more, actually. I was looking at my list while saying that. Some like it hot, I can muck with.
Cool. Lock it in. Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of black and white movies from any era, excluding 12 Angry Men and Seven Samurai, in no particular order, is
Sin City.
Our second entry is
Some Like It Hot.
Our third entry is
M.
Our final entry into the Movie Mount Rushmore of black and white movies from any era is
Raging Bull.
I'm not happy with this Rushmore.
Because
I genuinely feel we could take Sin City and M out and reinsert our two number ones and it might be a better Rushmore.
I just feel they're going to win. They've always destroyed.
I don't know, man. Raging Bull and Some Like It Hot in there. I don't know.
Do you know what I'm willing to do? I'll take Sin City off because I can see that getting demolished. I'm going to be honest. I'll let you put Seven Samurai in, but I'm so intrigued to see what M does. I'm willing to sacrifice 12 Angry Men.
Okay, so for the first time ever, we are rewriting.
Some poor AI has just chiseled a face and that has to just wipe 12 wipe it off. Sin City is out there. Sorry, Marv. But yeah.
So we're leaving 12 Angry Men off. All right. Cool, man.
Listen. I am that intrigued. It's not often I'd be willing to battle or to eliminate 12 Angry Men, but I'm so intrigued to see what M does.
Watch M win now. Go on.
95%.
Can you imagine? I'm actually kind of rooting for M to do really well now.
I'm really like, for me, because the worst thing that could happen to me now is 6% M and I've left off 12 Angry Men. Like I've just like violated my boy. Do you know what I mean? But I could put money down that this film's gonna do well. If people know film,
well,
if people could appreciate 12 Angry Men and Seven Samurai, it's the kind of people that can muck with M.
Herein lies the problem. We now enter the silver screen time travel multiverse, because at the time of recording, the 16th of January, I can say that next week, which is the week after the 16th of January, we will be doing our next live show right here on Silver Screen Dudes, and it will be the long-awaited top 10 westerns. However, at the time of this video releasing, excuse me, at the time of this video releasing, the live video will already have aired. So you won't know what the result is.
For 2 weeks.
No.
Well, we won't know. They just have to wait. They have to wait 1 week. Where
is it? You will already know what the result is because we will have announced it last week. Oh, cool. Yeah. You see how our mind messed up here. Basically, next week, the last week of January, we're doing a live show, but by the time this video airs, the live show will have been last week already, just because of the way the release schedule works. So hope you all enjoy top 10 westerns and hope you all enjoy this video.
There we are. Hope you enjoyed my number one. I'm still battling it.
All right, let's wrap it up then.
Okay, guys, so you know what to do. Head on over to X at Movie MT Rushmore or at Movie Pulse for you. We're going to be retweeting, so you can't vote twice. And that's where you will have the chance to do your laser-focused vote for El Capitan Del Nimarona, the best of the best of the best, sir, with honours. And to quote Highlander, there could be only one. And be sure to keep it Silver Screen Dudes, the Silver Screen Dudes, because we deliver fresh news to you daily, baby.
We do indeed. And yeah, so just keep it right here on the Silver Screen Dudes. For your latest and greatest, there should be some reviews coming out pretty soon as well. So should hopefully be doing a review for Mean Girls. That should be out again by the time this video airs. But yeah, stay tuned to the channel for reviews, classic reviews, movie news. It's all right here. If you're movie fans, this is the place to be. And we will see you guys next week right here on the Silver Screen Dudes.
See ya. See ya.